Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, if you've got your Bibles this morning, let's go ahead and open up to 1 Samuel 14. 1 Samuel 14. We are going to be starting in verse 24, although toward the end of today we will jump back just for a second and look at verse 23. Let me just tell you, we got a lot of ground to cover this morning, and there's a lot of action in the story, and so we'll kind of move through that really quickly because I want to make sure we leave enough time to get to answer the critical question of what is the main idea of this story, and then the other one, which is how does this impact our lives, and like what does this mean for us as we go forward. All right, so let's recap just a little bit. So for the last couple of weeks, we have been discussing the events that surround this battle narrative at the city of Michmash. So Saul and Jonathan in chapter 13 were in, one was in Michmash and one was in Gibba, and Jonathan won a small battle, and then they move out of the central mountain region down into the Jordan Valley to Gilgal, and when they do, the Philistines amass a huge army. They're outnumbered 60-1, basically, at one point, and they take the town of the Philistines take the town of Michmash with this 36,000 man army, and they are poised to deliver a great defeat of Israel because, as we looked at last week, Michmash controls this really vital east-west trade route and people movement and supply movement route that would allow the Philistines basically to go from the ocean to the Jordan River unimpeded. And last week we saw that Jonathan, through a great heroic act, leads Israel to this great victory. And that's kind of where we ended with verse 23. Well, verse 24 through the rest of the chapter, except for the last like five or six verses, tell another side of this same battle. It tells another part of this battle narrative. So as Jonathan and his armor bearer are doing their thing, Saul is doing something else back at the camp. And so that's where verse 24 takes place. So it's kind of a verses 1 through 23 give you Jonathan's side of the whole battle and what's going on with Jonathan. And then Saul comes in later with the rest of the army. And then 24 through kind of toward the end tell us what Saul is doing and take us through the end of battle and what happens after the battle. All right? So we're going to kind of, in chronological time, we're kind of going back a little bit to when Saul enters the battle. If you remember last week, Jonathan and his armor bearer, they conquer the outpost of the Philistines, and that in turn causes the entire Philistine army to go into this great panic. And they begin killing each other. And then Saul sees and hears that and sends his troops into the battle. What we're going to talk about to begin with starts at that point. All right, so let's read verse 24. Because verse 24 sets the stage for what's going to happen in the rest of the story. All right. And the men of Israel had been hard pressed that day. What day? The day of the battle. So Saul laid an oath on the people. That's the soldiers. Those 600 soldiers. Saying, "Cursed be the man who eats food until it is evening, and I am avenged of my enemies." So none of the people tasted food that day. All right, so you get what's going on? So Saul and his army see what's going on with Jonathan. And he says, "Hey guys, none of y'all is going to eat anything until we've won this battle." And they're like, "Okay." Right, because, I mean, they don't really have a choice, right? As you can tell, again, I'm still battling a cough. So, bear with me this morning. All right, so let's continue reading. Now, when all the people came to the forest, so they moved out of the fields and into the forest, behold, there was honey on the ground. And when the people entered the forest, behold, the honey was dropping. But no one put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan had not heard his father charge the people with the oath. Why didn't he hear his father? Because remember last week it says, he was not with him. Okay. So he put out the tip of the staff that was in his hand and dipped it in the honeycomb. And put his hand to his mouth and his eyes became bright. Why did his eyes become bright? Because he exerted a lot of energy, calorie deficit. Honey has a lot of what? Sugar. Blood sugar goes, shoo. Energy, instant energy. Then one of the people said, your father strictly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man who eats food this day. And the people were faint. Why were the people faint? Because they hadn't eaten. Let's keep going. Verse 30. Verse 20. Sorry, Tucker, you were ahead of me. All right. Then Jonathan said, listen to what he says. My father has troubled the land. See how my eyes became bright because I tasted a little of this honey? Verse 30. How much better if the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies that they found? For now the defeat among the Philistines has not been great. All right, I want you to stop right here for a minute. I want you to notice, so Jonathan is with the soldiers. They went out of the fields and into the forest, and he finds honey. And Jonathan does what any person would have naturally done. He stops to revive himself with a little bit of food, quick energy, so that he can have energy to sustain the battle, right? But then the guys tell him, hey, your father said we weren't supposed to eat. Now notice, Tucker, go back one verse. Notice what he says in verse 29. My father has, he tells us three things. He gives three indictments of Saul. The first one is interesting, and it's culturally significant. He says, my father has troubled the land. That word troubled is specific. In fact, if you remember your Israelite history in the book of Joshua, all right, centuries before this day, Joshua and the Israelites Moses is dead, Joshua's the leader. They cross over the Jordan River and they come to the first city, which is Jericho. And in that story in Joshua about the Battle of Jericho, they walk around the city a bunch of times, and then on the seventh day, they walk around seven times, and then they yell, and as we learned in VBS many, many years ago, the walls are come a-tumbling down, right? And in VBS, we had a little tune to it, but I'm not a singer, right? So they come, and I remember the VBS teacher went like this. They come a-tumbling down, right? Well, after that battle, the Lord tells Israel, do not take any of the spoil. Bring it all back for the Lord. Well, this one guy named Achan thinks he knows better. And so Achan takes a gold bar, hides it in his tent. And then Joshua, riding high on this great victory of this difficult walled city, goes to this itty-bitty little city called Ai. And they charge right at Ai, and Israel is decimated. They lose. And Joshua comes back and prays and says, Lord, what's going on? And there's this famous line. It says, there is sin in the camp. And when Joshua, finally they figure out it's Achan, and when Joshua confronts Achan, do you know what the text says? Achan troubled Israel. So what is Jonathan doing here? Jonathan could have chosen any word to describe Saul's actions. But what's the one word he uses? Troubled, which is the exact same word that was used when Achan sinned and troubled Israel, causing them great defeat. And so what is Jonathan doing here today? He's being very specific, and he is equating Saul's actions with Achan's actions. They both were troublers of Israel. So what happened? What does Jonathan say Saul should have done? In verse 30, he says, they should have allowed the people a little bit of the spoils of war today. But because Saul troubled Israel, took away this opportunity for the soldiers to have some bit of carbohydrate food load to continue the battle, what does he say? The defeat will not be what it could have been. And so Jonathan clearly lays a claim against his father that he troubled Israel that day. All right, verse 31. They struck down the Philistines that day. So now we're moving to the end of the battle. From Michmash to Ajalon. That's about 15 miles. All right. So what Jonathan is saying, catch it. There was a good victory. We won. It could have been even greater had his father not troubled Israel. Now look what the text says next. And the people were faint. Again, why were the people faint? They ain't had nothing to eat. All right, verse 32. So look what happens. The people, the word pounced here, is like when you're watching those National Geographic Discovery Channel and they're doing the series is on the big cats of Africa and like tigers and lions, and you know they get down on their all fours and they're real quiet, and all of a sudden they leap on the animal and get it. That's what the word pounce here means. It means the people ferociously dove on the spoils of war. And look what they go after first. They go after sheep, oxen, and calves. Why do they go after sheep, oxen, and calves? Because they're hungry. They're starving to death. All right? And what happens? And slaughtered them on the ground. And the people ate them with the blood. Okay? Now, let's go. We're going to come back to that statement in just a second, but let's go to the next verse. Then they told Saul, somebody told Saul, behold, the people are sinning against the Lord by eating with the blood. And he said, you have dealt treacherously. Roll a great stone here to me. Let's stop here. What is this all about? All right. Well, in Leviticus chapter 10, I believe, 17, verses 10 through 16, God lays out a very specific command to Israel that they should not eat meat with blood. And so, like, I was trying to think, like, how did this happen? How were they eating meat with the blood and like all of that? And so one commentator put it best. Think about it. You're a soldier. You haven't eaten all day because your king said you can't eat all day. Now, why would Saul do that? Some people have suggested he was trying to make this into this kind of like holy war type scenario. I think it's much more pragmatic. I think Saul laid an oath on the soldiers, don't eat, so that they wouldn't waste his time eating food when they could be fighting the enemy. Because he also says, back up earlier, we've already read it, he calls the Philistines not Israel's enemies, not God's enemies. He says they're my enemies. And so what was Saul trying to do with this oath? He's trying to force the people to keep fighting so he can win. Catch what I said? So that he can win a great battle and get a side of glory for himself. Right? So, since he laid this oath on the people are starving to death. They've been fighting all day. They've won a great victory. They're literally, the text, as if animals are jumping on these livestock. They're slaughtering them, killing them, and butchering them on the ground. So all the, you know, stuff is getting all mixed together. And like wild animals, they're eating the food. When what they should have been doing, because of Leviticus 17, 10 through 16, is they should have been hanging the animal up and butchering it like that so all of the fluids fall to the ground and the meat is therefore clean, literally clean. So if you've ever been deer hunting, that's what you do with a deer. You string it up. Makes it a whole lot easier. You get all the stuff you don't want. All the stuff that makes the deer taste gamey and nasty. It goes on the ground and then you have the meat. Right? And then you do whatever you want to with it. That's what Israel should have been doing. But because Saul laid this rash oath on them, they're out there just like animals. Saul realized that. And to Saul's credit, he comes up with a very quick and easy solution. Roll a stone over here to me and tell everybody to bring the animals here. Verse 34, let's keep going. And Saul said, "Disperse yourselves among the people and say to them, let every man bring his ox and his sheep and slaughter them here and eat. And do not sin against the Lord by eating with the blood." So every one of the people brought his ox with him that night and they slaughtered them there. So Saul does a good thing. He comes up with a solution to help his people. Let's not miss that. All right. And Saul built an altar to the Lord. It was the first altar that he had built to the Lord. All right, let's keep going. This is not the end of the story. This is where the story gets good. Or bad, depending on how you look at it. Then Saul said, "Let us go down after the Philistines by night and plunder them until morning light. Let us not leave a man of them." And they said, "Do whatever seems good to you." But the priest said, "Let us draw near to God here." All right, so you hear what's that? So Saul's solved the problem. Everybody's eaten. They've got full bellies. They've got spoils of war. And Saul says, "Hey, now that we've all eaten, we're not faint anymore. Let's go after them some more." And the soldiers, now with the little spoils of war, with a full belly, what do they say? "Hey, man, we're with you. Because in the back of their mind, they're probably thinking, "I've got a full belly. I've got some spoils of war here. I sure would like a little bit more." But the priests, what do? Maybe we should pray about this. Right? So they center Saul back to the Lord. Now let's keep reading. And Saul inquired of God, "Shall I go down after the Philistines? Will you give them into the hand of Israel?" But look what the text says. But he, that's God, did not answer him, that's Saul. But God did not answer Saul that day. In other words, God was silent. Now, what should we... We're going to read the rest, but what can we take away from this moment? Something's wrong. Something is not right among the camp of Israel for God not to answer Saul that day. In this context, verse 38. Saul realizes that because he says, and Saul said, "Come here, all you leaders of this people, and know and see how this sin has arisen today." What sin's he talking about? Well, we got to keep reading. Let's find out. "For as the Lord lives, who saves Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die." Now notice, he doesn't say, "me and Jonathan." You see what he says? Notice he says, he doesn't say, "for as the Lord lives, who saves Israel, though it be in me or my son Jonathan, we shall surely die." He says, because in Saul's mind, clearly, he hasn't done anything wrong, right? He says, "though it be in my son Jonathan." In other words, hey, I don't care who it is. They're going to die. "But there was not a man among all the people who answered him." So nobody fesses up to whatever sin Saul's referring to. So what does Saul do? Let's keep going. "Then he said to all Israel, you shall be on one side, and I and Jonathan, my son, shall be on the other side. And the people said to Saul, do what seems good to you." Now, I'm going to paraphrase what happens next. So in the next few verses, they cast lots. And there's this really two really weird words, Urim and Thummim. Don't get confused with those. It's something to do in the process of casting lots. And so they cast lots. So they cast lots between, is it in Israel or is it in the house of Saul? The lot falls with Saul. And then the lots are cast between Saul and Jonathan. And the lot falls with Jonathan. All right, so let's skip down to verse number 43. Verse 43. So the lot falls with Jonathan. And so listen to what Saul says. "And then Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what you've done." In other words, you can hear the angst and anger in the statement. "Tell me what you have done." Now look what Jonathan says. Jonathan told Saul, "I tasted a little honey with the tip of my staff that was in my hand." What does Jonathan do? He tells the truth. Then look what he says. "Here I am. I will die." What else does he do? Face the consequences. Now, before we click and go to verse 44, what we ought to read in verse 44 is this. And Saul said to Jonathan and all Israel, "Oh, Jonathan, you're not going to die today because you weren't here to hear the oath that I gave. And you never agreed to the oath. So surely the sin is not with you." That's what we ought to read. But here's what we do read. Verse 44. And Saul said, "God do so to me and more also. You shall surely die, Jonathan." What? Let's keep going. 45. Then the people, who's the people? The soldiers. The soldiers who saw every action in the day. They were there for Saul's oath. They were there for Jonathan's heroism. They were there for Jonathan's courage. They were there for Saul's stupidity. They see through the whole thing. And the people said to Saul, "Shall Jonathan die who has worked this great salvation in Israel?" It's not even been one day removed from the battle for the soldiers to process what's going on. They immediately know at the end of the day, it is Jonathan's actions whom through God worked, not Saul's. Far from it. As the Lord lives, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has worked with God this day. So the people, look at this word, ransomed Jonathan that day. I think that's how it ends. Tucker, click the next one. So they ransomed Jonathan so that he did not die. That word ransomed is a salvation word, right? It is to pay a price to buy something back. And so the people saved Jonathan that day because they knew the truth of the situation, right? In other words, if we were writing this story today, In our culture, in our context, here's what the soldiers would have said. "Saul, you'll touch one hair of his head over all our dead bodies." In other words, you got to kill us to get to him first. Now here's how the story ends, right? Let's read the next verse, verse 46. "Then Saul went up," that means he stopped from pursuing the Philistines, "and the Philistines went to their own place." Right? So now this is not in your notes, because we're about to transition to what is this story really about. But I want you to notice something real quick. I read this week. In less than three chapters, listen. Saul has fell out, Saul has ostracized and pushed away the prophet in Israel, Samuel. He's pushed away the soldiers of Israel, and he's pushed away his son. Think about that. He's pushed away Samuel, the soldiers, and Jonathan, all within basically three chapters. Now, we're going to ask the question later, like kind of why. We're going to get to the why question, but before we do that, we got to ask, what is going on in this story? Because honestly, as I read this story, I'm left with a lot of questions. Like, what's going on here? Like, I mean, like, what are we to make of Saul? Because like, in one moment he acts like a bonehead, but then at another moment he does a good thing. Why didn't God not answer Saul, right? What did Jonathan actually sin? Is there a law, like not Saul's ideas, but is there a law, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, law? Is there a law that was broken here somehow? Like, what's going on? And I think the best way for us to get to this passage, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you this, the passage is not gonna answer every question you got, right? But there are a few questions that I think this passage does answer. So let's go over those, and it's gonna help us get to our main point. Here's a couple questions. I think I've got them in your outline. Was Saul required by law to lay an oath on the soldiers? The answer to that question is no. He was not. So what does that mean Saul did? He did it arbitrarily. He did it because he wanted to do it. Second question. Did Jonathan, listen, I'm asking, you got to listen. Did Jonathan break the law? Did Jonathan break God's law? No. There's no law that says soldiers can't eat while they're in battle. Okay? So, is Saul required to make the oath? No. Did Jonathan break the law? No. Did God, in the text, does God say Jonathan sinned? No. Okay, last question. Did Jonathan break Saul's oath? Yes and no. Right? Did he eat the food? Yes. Did he break the oath? Not really, because he never made the oath. Because he wasn't, the text is clear, he wasn't there. His father didn't know he was gone. He wasn't near Saul. So, yeah, he ate the food, but no, he never made the oath. That'd be like holding somebody responsible for something they never heard. I didn't hear you say that, Ma. I was at softball practice. I was outside playing in the yard. I was at the football game. I didn't hear you say that. Right? So it's just kind of the same scenario. So again, we ask another question. So what's going on here in this casting of lots scene? Because Saul makes a big deal about this casting of lots. Here's what I think's going on. Listen to me. Saul is asking one specific question. He is asking, who broke my oath? That's the question. Saul is assuming, let's follow the line of events. Saul prays, should they continue the battle? And there's no answer. Then Saul gets everybody together and they cast lots. And the lot falls on Jonathan. And what does Jonathan say he does? I ate honey. Here I am. I will die. So the question that was being asked, Saul is assuming that God doesn't answer him because his oath wasn't kept. So when they cast lots, it's not a lot of who sinned and caused God not to hear me or God not to answer. The lots are being cast for who broke my oath. So Saul gets the answer he wants, but Saul asks the wrong question. Because see, if Jonathan had have sinned that day, literally sinned against the Lord, then there would have been consequences for him. And all the soldiers who saw everything going on that day would have agreed Jonathan sinned. But all the soldiers who saw everything going on that day realized Jonathan didn't do anything wrong. So what Saul is doing is he's asking a question, but he's asking the wrong question. So when he gets an answer to the wrong question, he assumes that's why God didn't hear me. And so Saul is bringing everybody together, not to really find out who sinned in the camp, but who broke my oath. That we already stated, he's not required to put on the people, and that is not regarding a law. So Saul arbitrarily puts the oath on the people, and then he wants to know why people, like, he wants to know what happened with this arbitrary rule. You with me so far? Everybody with me? So Saul gets the answer he wants, but it's to the wrong question. So what is going on? We ask this story. What is going on in the story? What is the point of this story? Well, Tucker, pull up verse 23. Well, again, we go back to verse 23 because this is the point of the story of chapter 14 as a whole. Last week we saw one half of how the story works. This week we see the other half. What's the point of this entire story in chapter 14? Here it is. And the Lord saved Israel that day. Now, last week, I've got a little graphic on your outline. I want you to look at that graphic right now. Look at that graphic. All right? Everybody looking at it? Here we go. Last week, we saw the green. I believe it's in green. Purple, excuse me. Last week, we saw the purple. And we said, and God, the main point of the story is, and God saved Israel that day. And then we said, and God saved Israel that day through Jonathan's heroic works. But guess what we see today? God saved Israel that day despite Saul's troubling Israel. Here's the whole point of chapter 14. God saves. Listen to me. God saves. That's the story of the Bible. We see it in living color in chapter 14. God saves. But look at me. I want you to listen to me very carefully. God can save through you or despite of you or in spite of you. He can save through you, meaning you can allow God to work in your life so that you are the hands and feet of the Lord, helping Him save people. Or you can be like Saul, and God can have to plow around you and work around you because of your stupidity and troubling of the people in your home, in your workplace, in your community, in your area of influence, as we like to say. So chapter 14 is clear. God saves. God can save through you or in spite of you. Now, we could stop right here and we could say, and we could kind of transition that to us, and the challenge would be, hey, let's go out this week and let's make sure we're the through, not the in spite of, right? But if we did that, listen to me, if we did that, all of us in here, listen, because this is the way our nature works. All of us in here would just automatically assume that we're the Jonathan in the story all the time, every day. Right? Surely I don't trouble my people. Surely I don't bring trouble into the camp. Surely I'm not Saul. Okay? So here's what I want to do. I want to make it even more crystal clear about how God saved through Jonathan and how God saved in spite of Saul. Because there are actions in this story that tell us or give us credence as to why God saved through Saul, through Jonathan, and in spite of Saul. So you with me? What are the actions of Jonathan? He acted courageously. He trusted in the Lord, right? Listen to me. Acted courageously, trusted in the Lord. What else does he do? He doesn't blame others. When he is confronted by Saul with the people of Israel there and the leaders of Israel, what does he say? He doesn't go, "Oh, Dad, it's your fault. If you hadn't been stupid, I could have eaten. Oh, man, come on, man. If you'd have called the battle off earlier, if those Philistines hadn't been here," what does he say? No blame. He says, "Here's what I did. I ate the honey." And then he accepts the consequences. If it's my time, it's my time. Those actions allows God to work through him. Now let's talk about Saul. What are the actions of Saul that cause God to have to work in spite of him? You ready? He troubles people. You say, well, how does he do that? Real quick. How does he trouble people? One, he makes poor decisions that negatively affect others around him. He makes poor decisions that negatively affect others around him. Listen to me, friends. In your home, in your work, in your life, when we make poor decisions that negatively affect those around us in our circle of influence, we are being more like Saul than we are like Jonathan. And God is having to plow around us to work instead of through us on his team. Here's the second reason. Whenever we are seeking answers to the wrong questions, God is having to work in spite of us, not through us. Right? What question should Saul have been asking? Lord, what did I do to cause this problem? Hey, my friend Chad Minner, who runs New Mercy's Biblical Counseling, I was working through a situation he was giving me some insight into how to handle a situation several months ago. And he said, hey, I'm going to give you this piece of advice that you can give to the people you're working with. He said, and he used the passage that where Jesus, I think it's in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says, whenever you're dealing with, like, I'm contexting this, whenever you're dealing with difficult situations and interpersonal conflict, Jesus says, hey, don't try to take the speck out of someone else's eye, but take the log out of your own eye. In other words, and Chad's point was, whenever you're in interpersonal conflict, the greatest question you can ask is, what did I do to add to this conflict? He said, whenever we start asking, whenever we look at what did the other person do first, we're already off on the wrong foot. Because Jesus says that our personal actions are what we should consider as the most important in interpersonal conflict, not what the other person did. And we got to start with ourselves. And that's exactly what Saul didn't do here. Saul didn't say, Lord, what did I do today to cause this issue? Where's the sin in me that caused you to not respond to me? What does he immediately say? If it even be Jonathan, they'll die. Saul has no concept of, it might be me who sinned. Saul says, it must be everybody else. Right? And which leads him to seek the wrong answers to the wrong questions. Therefore, he never gets the answer that really will affect change in him and in those around him. And what that causes him to do is what? Blame everybody else. Right? We saw this when he talked to Samuel back in chapter 12. Oh, if it wasn't for the Philistines. Oh, if you'd have been here on time. Oh, if the people hadn't been running away. And today, oh, it's surely not me, it's everybody else. Right? So look at me. When we act courageously, trust in the Lord, tell the truth, take the consequences, we are being people that God can work through and that God can save through. When we are poor decisions that negatively affect others, blame everybody else in every other situation, and when we ask for answers to the wrong questions that help no one and nobody, we are being like Saul. Right? Hey, look at me. I know a lot of you may have been wondering if I was going to say anything about the events of the last couple weeks. You know, I know some preachers probably took today, and this is not a better or worse thing, I'm just saying, so you can hear my thoughts. I know some preachers probably took today to speak on the assassination, martyrdom of Charlie Kirk and the Ukrainian refugee subway rider who got murdered and all of that. I choose to believe that God is big enough and sovereign enough to know that we were going to be in this passage today, and he knew what was going to happen. And so, like, what we saw this week is this dynamic playing out in real life in front of us. I'm not trying to make Charlie Kirk a saint. He clearly said he was a sinner saved by grace. But what did he do? Trusted the Lord. Acted courageously. He did everything Jonathan was doing. Everything. And guess what? God worked through him. God saved through him. The assassin? Poor decisions that negatively affect others. I mean, he's Saul in the story. I mean, this week we've seen this dynamic play out right in front of us in America. And here's the reality, guys, ladies, teenagers, young adults, kids. The reality is we're at a crossroads in our own lives of who am I going to be like? Am I going to be like Jonathan and be the one that God works through? Or am I going to be like Saul that the Lord just has to work around over and over and over and over and over? Because the text is clear. The Bible is clear. God saves. From beginning to end, from Genesis to Revelation, God saves. But it's up to you, and it's up to me, and it's up to us to figure out who are we going to be with. Are we going to be the one who God works through? Are we going to be the one who God has to work around and in spite of? Because God's going to do what He's going to do. And we can either be teamed up with Him or we can be teamed up in spite of Him. Right? Like we can be the one who, well, God's going to work, but He's going to work around Him. And every day, you and I have the choice. This isn't a choice we make one time and it's done. This is a choice we've got to make every day. So what's your challenge this week? We're about to wrap it up. Your challenge this week is, every day, be the person who acts courageously, who trusts in the Lord, who tells the truth, lives with the consequences of telling the truth and acting courageously and trusting the Lord, so that you can be the person that God works through. And look, if there's a moment when you feel like and you realize and you know you're slipping into that Saul side of the equation, guess what? All you got to do is pray and ask the Lord, hey, help me get back on track. Help me move. I'm being like Saul. I don't want to be like Saul. Lord, help me be like Jonathan. And guess what? The Lord will help you move in that direction. So the challenge this week is be courageous, tell the truth, trust the Lord, live with the consequences, and be the person that God works through and not in spite of.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.